And gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this Friday edition of the Hagmann Report. We are coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania. We have a fantastic show lined up for you tonight. We have Dr. Ted Brewer, who is our guest for the first 2 hours of the show, followed by WorldNet Daily author Jeff Yago in hour three. And we're going to get into a lot of great stuff tonight. And Dr. Ted is with us already. Now, first and foremost, we want to, his son Austin hasn't been feeling well, and apparently just talked to Ted before the show here, and he's feeling much better, but keep him in your prayers, as well as Stan Deo. Stan just had surgery, this week, I believe, and I talked to him today, and he said he's feeling much better. He's not going to be back with us on Tuesday, though. He's going to be back with us a week from this coming Tuesday. So keep them in your prayers, folks. We got a lot to get into. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the news. You have the constant war hype of U.S. and North Korea. You have all the ins and outs of that with the different coverages from the media outlets and their ridiculous responses. And you also have the Russia Mueller Trump investigation, which is just a joke, as we all know. But Ted, I don't know, where do you want to start tonight?
Well, it doesn't matter. Let's start real quick. I want to talk about this whole thing with Russia and what's going on in my perspective. And I've been doing a lot of research on this, Joe. Now, I'm assuming we're not going to be doing Skype video tonight, just Skype audio.
Yeah, that's fine, Ted.
That's fine. I wasn't sure because I make sure I don't start making weird faces here on your Skype broadcast. But what we've got going on with the thing with Trump, and it's very frustrating to me. This has nothing to do with the Russian elections. In fact, Putin has now said he's going to stop using the dollar in transactions with Russia as far as with their allies and people they work with. This is what the whole thing's been about. It's been about the petrodollar. It's been about the United States reserve currency. Everything else is obfuscation. They know as well as we know there's absolutely no traction whatsoever on what's going on with the Russians and Trump as far as getting the election. Even King Obama said before he left office that there was no relationship and they did not meddle in the elections, but it doesn't make any difference to these globalists who basically are hacked off at Trump because he's not marching to their drummer they want the way they want him to. And also it's dealing with the Clinton Bush crime syndicate that we'll talk about that in a few more minutes. So this whole thing's about the reserve currency of the planet, about the United States maintaining its petrodollar status and making sure that we can fund our 800 bases around the world, military bases, and we can hopscotch our human organs with our CIA and our drugs and our child trafficking and our human trafficking and all the things they do with these military bases is to maintain this hegemony around the planet. That's why they're making such a big deal about it, because they know that we should have basically extricated ourselves from the Federal Reserve System long ago. We have not done that, and now we're kind of hooked by the throat to it. And they know if we lose our world reserve currency, because remember the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa were all working on their own basket of currencies, and they were trying to get away from the SWIFT system of payments. And sometimes they're actually going around that. This is exactly what happened with Gaddafi. This is exactly what Saddam Hussein wanted to do. This is exactly what all of these guys are trying to do or tried to do before they were overthrown by our CIA / Mossad / secret society / controlled military. And this is what's going on right now. So let's step away from what's happening with that. The same thing true with Korea. We are transporting so much opium and processed heroin out of Afghanistan now. It's unbelievable. And Korea has now become a major heroin producer. And I personally believe that's the reason we are looking to them. Plus they have an independent central bank and they're pretty much going to, be wiped out if they're not careful with what the rhetoric is they are saying. But again, it has nothing to do with Korea's ability to launch missiles towards us, because we have a space-based missile shield system that was put into place 20 years ago that can stop any of that. Plus, we also have our land-based systems that we could put in South Korea and pretty much stop any launching of any ICBMs directly. So if this whole thing is just obfuscation, Joe, it's all a bunch of lies, and it's something that we just need to realize. But I wanted to address something else. Today I was reading, and Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Baldwin, is a friend of mine, and also about three of the pastors that are and were praying for Trump a few weeks ago, they're also friends of mine, the ones who are actually in the Oval Office praying. And Chuck Baldwin wrote an article today called "The Truth About Donald Trump." Now, this was Thursday, August the 10th, 2017, by Chuck Baldwin, and I can honestly say that his facts are absolutely perfect in this article as far as who Donald Trump is, what he's been involved with it. And what happens, I got this morning, I want to read you part of it, because Chuck's a friend of mine, and these other pastors are friends of mine, and since he's directly talking about these pastors, I felt as though I needed to step in and give you kind of a middleman take. And also, I wrote one of the pastors this morning, Joe, a pretty detailed email. I want to tell you what I wrote in that email also. But some of the things that he said in this email today, or this newsletter from Chuck Baldwin, he goes, "This column is written primarily in response to the way a host of televangelists, pastors, and self-professing Christian talk show hosts and Christian leaders promoting Donald Trump as a man of bold Christian faith, a Bible-believing Christian, a modern Moses, a modern John the Baptist, a man for the body of Christ, a real Christian, etc." And then Chuck goes on to say, and I'm gonna ad-lib some of this, but I'll tell you when I do. "Forgive me, but I've heard all this before, back when George W. Bush was president. One noticeable distinction between Bush and Trump one is Bush did often publicly express a personal faith in Christ, not that it made him a better president, but at no time has Donald Trump made a public profession of faith in Jesus Christ. A bunch of reverends have claimed that Trump has made such a profession, but we've never heard it from Trump himself. Because George Bush," now I'm reading parts of this article, I'm not going to read it all. If you guys want to read all of it, you can. Because George W. Bush claimed to be a believer in Christ, he's absolutely could do no wrong in the eyes of America's evangelical pastors and Christians. And Joe, that is the truth. I watched so many Christians step aside and not pay any attention to what he was doing when he took us to war, when he took away our Bill of Rights, all the things that he did. And Chuck goes on to say, "When he took America into two unconstitutional, illegal, and immoral wars, Christians cheered. When he bombed innocent men, women, and children in the name of the war on terror, Christians cheered. And when he created a brand new war doctrine, the preemptive war doctrine, Christians cheered." And he goes on to say that when he filled his cabinets with CFR globalists, Christians cheered. And he goes on to say that Christians and conservatives completely overlooked the Bush family's connections to Saudi Arabia, the Bush family connections to international drug running, the Bush family connections to the globalist war traders and profiteers, and the Bush family connections to the German Nazis and Italian fascism. Because Bush was a Christian, he could do no wrong. Christians are completely overlooking the same, a lot of information about Donald Trump. Trump's companies have filed multiple bankruptcies. Trump has spent his entire adult life as a philandering playboy. These are Baldwin's quotes. "Almost everybody knows that Donald Trump has been married three times and has innumerable sexual affairs. When Trump was deposed in the divorce with his first wife, Ivanka, he invoked the Fifth Amendment right to keep silent about his relationship with other women 97 times. He had an affair with his second wife, Marla Maples, while he was still married to Ivanka. Regarding his current wife, Melania, in 1999, shortly after he began dating, she participated in an on-air phone call with Donald Trump and Howard Stern." I'm not going to discuss what they talked about. "Trump's lifelong immoralities, infidelities, and sex capades cannot even be discussed in polite company. And oh yes, there's this. Donald Trump spent his entire business life consorting with international crime syndicates and the Jewish mafia. One does not become an international casino tycoon without getting in bed with gangsters. Months ago, Baldwin says, "I posted on my Facebook page that I expected Mike Pence would assume the presidency at some point. I still think that Pence is the one the globalists really want in the White House." I agree with Chuck 100% on that. "How Trump is connected to the corruption scandals, scandals, and Trump's association with the Jewish mafia billionaires, among whom Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, Ivanka's husband, and his family belong to, is easily documented. Does all this mean that Donald Trump cannot and will not make some decisions, good decisions, as our president? Not at all. If it is true that Trump's ordered the CIA to stop supporting the Syrian rebels, that's good. I applaud Trump's decision to ban transgenders from the U.S. military. My only question is, why didn't he ban all homosexuals from military service at the same time? Since the days of George Washington until Barack Obama, the U.S. military has deemed homosexuality incompatible with military service. And why did Trump stop with transgenders? Why did Trump leave that Barack Obama order allowing homosexuals to serve in the military intact? And for that matter, why doesn't Trump undo Obama's order putting women into combat units and submarines? For Christian televangelists and Christian talk show hosts to make Trump into a modern John the Baptist and refuse to deal with the true nature is of this man we call the president is the height of gullibility and irresponsibility. And he goes on to say, was Hillary better? Of course not. And he goes on to say, believe it or not, the column was not intended to be an anti-Trump rant. Instead, it's to be honest, truthful analysis of a man we elected president of the United States. It is intended to be a wake-up call for many Christian brethren across the countries to get real. Now, the reason I read that in detail, like I said, Chuck Baldwin is a friend of mine. I've had dinner with him out in Montana. I highly respect him, and he is really on point with a lot of things that he says. And quite frankly, this is a very factual, very direct article about Trump and his past. Now, here's what I wrote one of the TV folks that was in the White House and in the Oval Office about this article after I sent it to him. He said back, he said this is a load of hogwash and that Chuck has no clue. And then he says some other things I won't repeat. And so I went and said this. I said, look, I know you, you're a friend, and I also know Baldwin. So I see this situation different than either of you. I think Trump is swimming in a pool of sewage, piranhas, and great whites. Much of Trump's past has come back to haunt him. The Jewish international banking community has repeatedly bailed him out. He has more CFR appointees than either Obama or Bush, and all CFR members are globalists who want a new world order. He worked with the Jewish mafia for years in New York. Kushner is currently working with Soros with cadre development. So Trump, I believe, wants to extricate himself from his past, but because of the entanglements, he cannot. I believe he is saved. I also believe he wants to restore the USA. But I also believe he is beholden to a bunch of really bad people who want to use him to accomplish their goals. Since he wants to do what is right and wants to follow Christ, these globalists are planning on taking him out and installing Pence. As far as his sexcapades are concerned, he was not saved at that time. As Christians, we are taught to overlook someone's past when they are born again. However, the world does not. Baldwin was right about Bush. Christians followed him into a ditch. So the article is factually accurate, but it has not taken into consideration a true born-again experience. But Trump really needs to publicly, on national television, proclaim that he is a born-again Christian. Plus, he needs to stop the CFR appointments and the Rothschild-Goldman Sachs appointments. At this point, he has not found his, quote, sea legs, so to speak. We must all pray he finds them quickly. Plus, these Russian sanctions and constant Korea rhetoric needs to stop. Quite frankly, due to his past, he is in over his head, and only a total intervention by the Holy Spirit can fix and save the USA. Now, I say that he is an accidental president because I heard that term from Steele, and I believe Steele was right about that. I personally believe, Joe, that when the information was released a week before the election about Hillary being back under investigation and also about the soul cooking parties off the Podesta emails, that the globalists who are involved in the satanic cabal that pretty much runs the planet did not want this information coming out because it was exposed. I believe our prayers made a difference. And I believe, as Robert Steele has said, that Trump is the accidental president because the fix was in for Hillary to win. However, now Trump is in. He is our president, and we need to support him. So personally, I've given you my background as far as my relationship with these pastors, and I've also read you the stuff from Baldwin today, and I've read you my response to Baldwin's article. What do you think about this, Joe?
Well, you know, the part about Trump being an accidental president, I agree, as you said, to the extent that the fix was in for Hillary Clinton. The political establishment were all one-sided toward Hillary Clinton. The news media was all in towards Hillary Clinton, even CNN saying, you know, we campaigned for her as much as we could. We really couldn't even do any more for her if we wanted to. And the only people who weren't in on it was the American people. And the voting of the American people, the silent majority, as some call it, turned out in droves. And regardless of what voter fraud or manipulation the Clintons already had set up, outvoted that manipulation. And what role the Lord played in it, I know a lot of Christians prayed to never see the day where Hillary Clinton would be the leader of America, and thank the Lord, it was November 20th, You know, we know that Donald Trump was elected the 45th president, and whether that was by accident or not, whatever the Lord has planned, he definitely bought us some time, as I believe if Hillary Clinton was elected, that, you know, it would have been the death nail in this republic. But we're still not out of the woods yet. We still have that political establishment in power. And as you said, Trump is surrounded by sewage. And it is, you know, he's still navigating his way through it. And we see, you know, small victories and whatnot, here and there, but we see the majority of people are coming against him in the political and media establishment. And it's going to be a hard battle. And, you know, obviously him winning the election was only the very beginning of this fight we are engaged in. And his agenda is what is key in making sure we get through.
Well, the Bush Nazi cabal basically really entrenched itself into the United States. You know, with both the Bushes and the Clintons being in, and then the Rockefeller cabal pretty much came back in with Barack Obama. And so this is like a fight between two of these big groups of people that want to run the planet. And sadly, we need to understand that, you know, we are in the middle of a fight for the life of the United States of America. These guys have extricated and removed, like, what is it, $40 trillion worth of wealth from the United States. They've decided now to go ahead and bankrupt the country and be done with it. And they're basically on their processed road to do that. So we need to continue to pray that this does not happen, because, guys, here's the deal. I mean, if we lose the reserve currency status of the world, if we lose the petrodollar, we'll have no way to fund this giant deficit that we have every single year, and our dollar is going to go the way of Zimbabwe. I mean, we're going to be printing hand-over-fist banana republic money like they did in the Weimar Republic. I believe this is the goal, to break the United States up into district states and basically have us broken up like the Soviet Union was. I believe that's what they're trying to do. And so if we want to maintain this country, we've got to put aside our special interest, you know, complaints, and not allow them to come in and continue to try to divide us. And we have to turn around and do the best we possibly can to stay unified as a body of believers, as a Christian country. That's why they're doing cultural warfare on us right now, Joe. The economic warfare hasn't worked really well. The Cloward and Piffott economic warfare model they started back in the 60s is taking a big toll on the United States as far as from a debt load, but it hasn't destroyed the country because we were still raising little Americans. Now they're bringing in huge amounts of immigrants who aren't little Americans. In fact, we have about 100 million immigrants in the United States now in the past 30, 40 years, and they're basically not, you know, supporting the values that it took our country to make.
And
the
Ted,
problem they've run. Yes,
if I could just jump in real quick here.
Sure.
You know, one of the things that it's interesting that when we talk about immigration and historically immigrants coming to America, the vast majority of immigrants throughout history to America have all had or adopted a very strong work ethic and a love for country. And we are seeing the opposite of that now with the immigrants that are being brought in now. And that is in a major part due to what the government is handing them, you know, giving them the taxpayer benefits and all these things that they, you know, used to in the past historically would work for. Now they're just handing them out for free, and that is playing into bankrupting the country. So it's a whole shift in the mentality, of the allegiance to the country, to the work ethic. And it is, they're trying to, as you said, culturally destroy the country as their economic plans have not gone the way that they want them to. But couldn't they just pull the plug on the stock market or make the housing bubble, you know, pop again? There are ways to fast track this economic catastrophe that they want to bring in.
Remember, the Rothschild Sabbatean cabalists who worship Lucifer, who are basically running the planet and running the CIA, they play both ends against the middle. They're continuing to buy up the New York Stock Exchange in their mergers and acquisitions and interlocking corporate directorships as we speak, until they're going to do the same thing they did to Germany, which was the beta test back in the early 20s with the Weimar Republic, in which the international banking community came in and bought up the entire stock market in Germany. And when the hyperinflation occurred, they stayed in front of the hyperinflation curve. And with the end of it all, when new money was issued in Germany and the Weimar Republic was done, they owned all the industry, they owned everything, they owned all the infrastructure, they owned everything. And this, of course, led to the rise of Hitler and the rise of fascism, because Hitler then again blamed the international banking community, which was primarily Jewish, that they had done this with the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. And basically he had enough of it, and so he basically nationalized the assets of these guys and restored Germany back to where it had been prior to World War I, as far as economic abilities, and including getting rid of the Federal Reserve Bank, the Rothschild-controlled bank in Germany in the early 30s when he assumed the role of Führer in 1933. Now, Hitler made a lot of good moves when he first came into office, and he also made a lot of really bad moves, like Night of the Long Knives, Kristallnacht, and all the crazy things he did with the concentration camps and the mass slaughter of the innocents. I mean, he did some stupid stuff that was really ridiculous, which has put him into the history books as one of the worst tyrants in the history of the planet. But the reality is he stood against the international banking cartel. Remember, it's the same Rothschild banking cartel that played the North and the South against each other in the Civil War here in the United States to try to bring back in their Bank of America that they had already established in 1812. That was one of the things that they did in 1812 to stop the War of 1812, is they required that we put in another Rothschild-controlled, England-controlled Federal Reserve Bank in the United States, which Andrew Jackson immediately got rid of as soon as he could in 1832 when their charter was revoked. And this is exactly why we had the Civil War, because this group of people decided they were going to split the United States in half, which is what their mantra always is to divide and conquer. This is who these guys are. Remember, these are the Sabbatean Kabbalists. These are the wizards. These are the warlocks. These are the witches. These are the guys that basically do these sacrificial ceremonies. These are the druids. It goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 6. These are the guys that were taught by the fallen angels how to worship Lucifer and do what they do. And then it ended up being taken up, and this mantra got picked up by the Sabbateans in the 1600s. And Sabbatean Levi basically brought this thing to a forefront in Europe, and basically had millions of followers. I mean, this whole thing we've talked about on your show multiple times. So that's who's running the planet right now. We've got to get a grip on that, because what we've done is we've turned the ability, we've taken our country, Joe, and we've elected these officials who are pedophiles, who are homosexuals, who are basically drug addicts, who are whoremongers. I mean, list it. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein with his pedophile island has so many of our Congress guys, I am sure, and other people have done the same thing, I am sure, that they're basically compromised. That's why they vote the way they vote. But the problem is we've given control of our country to those guys, and our Constitution has provided a lot of resiliency as far as the fall of the Republic. The problem is they've taken it over, and they've given it to the military. The military has given it over to the CIA, which is a satanic organization. The CIA, of course, is being run by these Sabbatean Kabbalists who want to turn us all over into a D-Wave computer to tie us into an interdimensional interface with Lucifer. That's what they're trying to do. And so you can't look at the obfuscation and all this junk that's going on in the media as to what they're doing. They're basically playing a game with us. These Sabbatean Kabbalists are funding both sides. But you're absolutely right. Once they have seized enough of the assets of the United States, once they have seized pretty much all the industry like they've done in the Weimar Republic, they're going to hyperinflate the currency. And when they do that, they're going to drop all of these naked shorts they're doing in the precious metal markets. And the gold and silver are going to go through the roof, because the gold and silver is the only thing making people think that the dollar is still retaining value. That's the only reason the dollar hasn't gone to crap in the last 3 or 4 years, last 10 years, is because of the naked shorts they put on the gold and silver all the time in the COMEX. So once they stop doing that and silver goes to $1,000 an ounce and gold goes to $20,000 an ounce, we're going to have massive, massive inflation. In fact, they'll probably go even higher than that. But it doesn't mean that gold and silver has gone up in value. It'll mean that we're actually going to see the true value of the United States petrodollar basically go away. And see, and that's what they're trying to basically stall by what they're doing with Russia. And again, I'm going to say this. It has absolutely nothing to do with the elections as to why Russia has been sanctioned. And the Congress knows what's going on. That's why they voted almost unanimously to sanction Russia, because Russia's trying to get away from the petrodollar. And indeed, Putin has now said they're going to stop using the dollar in their international transactions. They're moving away from it as quickly as possible. And because of the sanctions, this has been precipitated more quickly than Putin wanted to have done. So it's going to be an interesting road in the next couple of years, because you're absolutely right, Joe. As soon as they have had enough of the bleeding of the country, they're going to basically collapse the currency, or they're going to collapse the stock market. Because remember, all they've got to do, Joe, is do naked shorts on the stock market right now and start selling their shares. That's all they've got to do. They can start selling their shares of the Fortune 500 corporation, and they can drop the stock, and they do it all with shorts, and they'll make money all the way down. And so they can take another huge, take trillions and trillions of dollars more from the American people who are still in these equity markets as quickly as they want to do it, to finish the complete rape and desolation of the United States, which I believe that's going to be their final objective. What do you think, Joe?
Well, you know, today on our daily show, we were talking about North Korea and Iran in the context of the something you pointed out to us, that all wars are banker wars. You know, the Bank of International Settlements does not have control of the North Korean or the Iranian financial system. And look who the two biggest enemies that our media and government try to say are our enemies, which is North Korea and Iran. And there were another number of other countries that were on that list, which all had their governments overthrown, and Libya being the I believe the last one, when Gaddafi went to switch to the gold standard and move completely away from the petrodollar. And that's when Hillary Clinton, you know, we came, we saw, he died. You know, that happened almost right away. So
that's exactly right.
We have to look at the context of these, how these wars do tie into the financial systems, both nationally and internationally, and understand that there is this, you know, global banking elite mafia that pulls all the strings of our military, our political system, and it's not just here in America, it's across, you know, the world, and they're trying to tighten their grip and consolidate their power so they have complete dominance over all the citizens of the globe, and they're not going to stop until they do.
Well, that's exactly right, because they have to, in order to bring in a one-world currency, you know, one-world government, they have to take control of all the central banks, and they don't have that control yet. And so these countries that are standing against this Sabotin Cabalist group, these Rothschilds, these Rockefellers, these people that have been completely and totally compromised from a moral standpoint, once they are able to come in and take control of this, like through their CFR members. And I mean, this is crazy with the CFR. I mean, that consummate foreign relations started back in World War One with the Versailles Treaty, and these groups of people basically put together an understanding. They wanted a one-world government, and they tried to do it with the Versailles Treaty and the League of Nations. They couldn't get it ratified through the U.S. Senate because it was just such an unbelievable, horrible mess on the sanctions they were imposing against Germany for not even starting World War One, which led to World War Two, which is, of course, one of their goals was. Because remember, we know with the Balfour Declaration, with the Rothschilds, as far as the State of Israel, you know, they were told they would do this if they could get the United States into the war. And, of course, we had to have World War II to finish that final thing as far as getting the entire country, you know, tied up in this war. And then in 1947, you know, Israel got its statehood. And, of course, the Palestinians were displaced. Now we've had this big mess in the Middle East now since then. So, and I know we have a lot of Christians listening to this who probably have a different opinion of it than I do. But I believe we should pray for Israel. I believe we should pray for Israel. I believe that we should pray for God's grace on Israel. But remember, Tel Aviv is the number one homosexual destination in the world. I mean, this is something that we've got to talk about. We can't just pretend like Israel is the Israel of the Old Testament. It's not. Israel is the Israel of the Kabbalah, of the Babylonian Talmud, not of the Torah. And we have to get that. I mean, I've talked to so many folks of mine, friends of mine who are of the Jewish faith, and I ask them if they ever read the Torah, and I've never heard one of them yet, not one of them, ever tell me that they read the Torah. They read the Babylonian Talmud. Now, I did have one Jewish rabbi who was a brilliant, brilliant man. Actually, two of them that I've known that I did a reset. In fact, I did a TV show with one of them. It was called The God Squad in New York City. It was actually a Catholic priest and a Jewish rabbi. And the Jewish rabbi, one of the most brilliant men I've ever met. The guy was just staggeringly smart. And he constantly read the Torah, and he was awake and on point as far as what the Old Testament said and what the Torah said. And he didn't follow the Babylonian Talmud, to my understanding. See, this is what we have to get through our minds, that the Israel of the Old Testament is not who Israel is right now. We've got to get that. And if we understand that, that's why I believe we should pray for Israel. I believe we should, you know, support Israel the best we possibly can. But when Israel does something wrong, when they start needless wars, their Mossad gets involved. I mean, look at this stuff this week, and with McMaster's, how they supposedly intercepted a communique from McMaster's to Soros, telling them that Soros was giving McMaster's was giving the inside information to what was going on in the White House. First of all, why in the world is Israel spying on the United States and intercepting these types of communique? I mean, what's going on with that? Why does anybody ask that question? And secondly, you know, how do we know that any of that's even true? Because we know that McMaster's is a big pro-Iranian guy in the Iranian deal. I mean, so we don't know what's going on, because remember, it's like you said, Joe, just a minute ago, they want Iran to come on down because they want to put that central bank in Iran. I'll never forget this when Iraq fell. I remember, I forgot who the thing, I think it was Tom Brokaw. This is like back, gosh, it's like 17 years ago when Iraq came down. I remember he said for the first time in the history of Iraq, they no longer have a government-controlled central bank. And they were installed, and they were bringing Wolfowitz in to bring in an independent central bank into the country. And I actually wrote it down in one of my journals, and I actually wrote the quote down. This is the goal of all of these countries, and you are exactly right, Joe, when they do this, because they want to maintain the hegemony over the whole world, and they're not going to be able to do that without the petrodollar, and they're concerned they're going to lose it. Now, here's another article I want to talk about, and I want to jump into what we're doing. This article was written by a guy named Schneider, and it says, "Why Rebels Are So Important to Society." Now, I'm not going to read you the whole article, but he did make a couple of interesting points on this, because, you know, what you and your dad do, and what I do, what Dave Hodges does, what Sheila does, this is kind of a rebellious thing that we're involved in, Joe. I mean, it's because we're not marching to the status quo. We're not doing what we're told to do. We're saying, hey, wait a minute, why don't we think through this and see if we can figure out what's really going on? And he says in his article, he goes, "Rebels are generally well-meaning and intelligent, besides being very passionate, compassionate, and determined individuals. In addition, they have great potential to explore and lead others through uncharted waters. It can be exciting to be around these colorful characters like rebels. They are original thinkers and show courage in the face of overwhelming opposition, and the enthusiasm of the rebel is admirable, whether or not you agree with their convictions. However, their creativity can be embarrassing for others, such as when it comes to defending or showcasing unconventional ideas. And a lot of people dislike that people bow to authority or easily accept the status quo without question." So I want to say that article real quick because of this. I'm going to cover some health stuff right now. Now, I know we got a break coming up, Joe. Are we going through the break?
No, Ted, what we're going to do is the 7:30 break and the 8:30 break. We are going to just move past those and take the top of the hour break.
Okay. I apologize. I didn't want to break your flow. But what happens is this. You know, when I got involved in health and nutrition and all the stuff that I learned back, 40 years ago, longer than that. And I've been working out in the gym now for almost 50 years. When I started learning all of this stuff, I started realizing that the status quo that we had been taught concerning life, life expectancies and health, exercise, physiology, and a lot of the other things that, you know, I was taught in the university system, I found out later that simply a lot of it wasn't true. A lot of it had been just, we had been misinformed, or we had had bad research, or we had been, basically the research had been skewed because certain people didn't want us to know the research. Now let me give you the real statistics here. And this is a death score, basically. It's a total deaths in the United States since January the 1st, 2000. This is Big Pharma's chemical warfare on humanity, dwarfs the number of victims killed by all world wars and acts of terrorism combined. While the drug companies profit billions, people are dying by the millions. And this is from pharmadeathclock.com. And it says that since the last 17 years, we've had 17,623 people die from chemotherapy. Now, that doesn't mean they died of cancer. They're saying they died from chemotherapy.
Remember, I saw that.
Yeah, because a lot of people, Joe, they may have 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, 2 years to live if their treatment protocol is not started. In other words, they say, well, you have 2 to 3 years to live if you don't do anything. Well, a lot of these guys start the chemotherapy and they're dead within a couple of months. And so they're saying that 17,623 people have died from chemotherapy in the past 17 years. Now, let me give you an example. I had a good friend of mine. His name was Richard. He lived over in St. Pete. He was in his mid-60s. This is about 15 years ago. I was in my mid-40s. And he called me up one day and he goes, "Ted, I've got prostate cancer." Now, Richard was probably 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds overweight. And he said, I'm 65 years old. I've got prostate cancer. What do you think I should do?" And I said, "Well, there's a lot of different things you can do. You can do the pellets. You can do chemo. You can have it removed. But quite frankly, Richard, most of the time with prostate cancer, it's such a slow-growing cancer. You're going to die from something else before you die from prostate cancer, and a lot of times it's best just to leave it alone. But you can check with your physician and let him tell you what to do, because I don't want to be involved in your deciding. I'm just giving you the alternatives." So Richard said, okay. And now remember, Richard had a bad diet. He was overweight and had a lot of other health problems. But he went ahead and opted for the radiation pellets and apparently the chemotherapy. And so this is like September. He called me up. Well, they told him if he didn't do anything, he'd be alive for probably 10, 15 more years because he didn't have a really fast form of cancer in the prostate gland. And so I sent him a Christmas card like 3 months later, him and his wife. And then she wrote me back and said that he had died in December, that he had been dead 3 months after he started treatment. This is what they're talking about. And Richard had been a good friend of mine for many, many, many years. Now, the second type of death are iatrogenic deaths, which are basically deaths caused by doctors who make the wrong decision or have to make a mistake. And the deaths since 2000 are 13,815,000. Hospital errors, 7,700,000. Bed sores, 2 million. Hospital malnutrition, almost 2 million. Adverse drug reactions, almost 2 million. Medical errors, almost 2 million. Hospital infections, 1.3 million. surgery related, 560,000, superbugs, 405,000, prescription drugs, 400,000. And this just goes on and on all the way down. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, 290,000. And so what they're saying here is that we've got, right here, we've got 30 million, 40 million, close to 50 million people dead in the past 17 years, just because of the death culture that we have from the death pharma clock. And I think we all need to pay attention to that, guys. There's, you know, Katie, Dave Hodges' ex-co-host, she contacted me a couple of years ago, and she was working with her doctor out in Colorado, and she didn't want to do chemotherapy, and she decided to do a natural approach to breast cancer. She had a very aggressive type of breast cancer, and she worked with her doctor out there, and he put her on vitamin C. She also went on turmeric. She also went on potassium iodine. She also went on vitamin C intravenously, and she took a bunch of other supplements, changed her diet, got off of alcohol, sugar, coffee, and she completely recovered from the breast cancer with no chemotherapy and no radiation. Now, she did have a lumpectomy. Now, what's interesting about this, and I use her as an isolated example, and I realize that would be called a and that's not called a double-blind clinical research study. That's called they got another term for it. It'll come to me in a second. And anecdotal research. And what ends up happening is we have a lot of people who have anecdotal evidence that shows that they recover from certain types of diseases because they did certain protocols. Well, here's the thing. If we got 17 million people dying from chemotherapy, you know, chances are we probably need to look at a different protocol. I don't know how to say that better than that, Joe.
And Ted, I was confused at how they determined that the deaths were all, you know, that were caused by chemotherapy. But is it not true that it is, you know, it is really a toxin to the body, destroying cells? And it just seemed like an incomplete study to me, like the information wasn't there. I'm sure they didn't do autopsies on all these 17 million people to see what the real causes of death were. So to me, it's kind of, I mean, I'm not obviously a doctor or a scientist, but it left a lot of questions.
No, I agree with you, Joe. In fact, I had the same question. That's why I went to the website and I tried to pull up the research and how they came up with these numbers. And these numbers may be skewed. They may be high. But the point is, they're still in the millions. And that whether or not these are exact numbers, it's still in the millions. In fact, I even looked up the iatrogenic one myself. I looked that up in the research and I wanted to find out what it said. And it said in the iatrogenic research, if you look up on Wikipedia, that 783,936 people die every year from deaths caused by doctors. Now, in 17 years times 783,000, that would be around 13,800,000 people. And that's directly out of Wikipedia. So I wanted to look that up myself because you're absolutely right. It's a pretty damning statement to say that everybody's dying because of chemotherapy. But the reality is, Joe, I've known a lot of people who've died prematurely from chemotherapy. I don't want to talk about this anymore because what will happen is I'll take the whole show on this because I know so many people who died from it. Okay, here's another article that was done. This is a Reuters article by a guy named Andrew Seaman, and it said that more than a third of the U.S. adults were prescribed opioids in 2015. Now, think about that for a second. This is Reuters Health. The United States needs to curb excessive opioid prescribing and improve access to pain management techniques, suggests a new government study. Researchers found that more than one-third, that's 100 million people in the U.S., were prescribed the medications in 2015 and many also misused the drugs. A very large proportion and large number of adults use these medications in a given year, said the author, Dr. Wilson Compton, deputy director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse in Bethesda, Maryland. And he goes on to say, quote, I was still a bit surprised that 38% or about 92 million people used prescription opioids in 2015. Joe, do you realize how big that is and how addictive these products are?
You know,
and I personally...
John and I were talking about this earlier off air. And, you know, in 2015, I had a cyst removed from my lower back and I was prescribed pain medicine. So I wonder how much the difference has to be made. How many people are prescribed given multiple prescriptions versus, you know, a one-time getting your tooth pulled or some kind of small surgery versus how many people are getting, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 12 prescriptions in a given year. That would be really interesting to see. But obviously, that yesterday Trump declared opioids as a national emergency and is putting the power of the federal government and White House behind fighting it. And there's obviously a huge number of abuses of opioids in this country, and it's getting worse and worse as we see the continuation of the increase of overdoses from heroin. But I, you know, this study, it doesn't, it just shows you how many people were, and I think that number's still low, what, 100 million. I bet it would be higher than that. But the
I know a couple of years ago I was having some back issues from my research, from surgery that I had done, and I was prescribed some opioids. You know, I mean, so you're right. It's very, very, very common. I know just the other day, Dave Hodges called me up. I believe it was on Saturday night or Saturday morning, and said he had real bad back pain, and he was having real bad sciatica down his left leg. And he asked me, what could you do? And he had some of our magnesium oil. Remember, magnesium relaxes muscles and calcium contracts muscles. And I told him, I said, just, you know, rub the magnesium oil on the affected area on your lower back, because chances are you have inflammation in that body and your body's get, those muscles are tightened up. But he called me back like Sunday morning. He goes, what in the world's in that product? He said, I have no pain at all anymore. He said, I cannot believe it. I can go out and play golf. I was having a hard time walking. And I said, well, Dave, it's because almost everybody has a magnesium deficiency. Now, I want to do something for the audience again, and I don't like promoting too much on the show because I just rather do straight talk. But what we're going to do is we've got the Doug 5 coupon is active again. We're going to have that active for the next week. But I'm going to do something different for the audience tonight. What I'm going to do, about 8 months ago, I did something that we had a really good response with, and people were so appreciative. I want to do a talk to Ted 15-minute phone call. And so for everybody who orders $500 worth of product tonight, or this week, for the next week, I'm going to give them a 15-minute phone call window in which I'm going to call them and I'm going to talk to them for 15 minutes. Plus, I'm also going to, if they want to be on it, I've got it every day. I send out about a dozen new emails of the shows that I cover, the stories that I cover on my show, Joe. And I also send some stuff out that I don't cover. And it's my private email list is what it is. And I've got a few slots still available on that. So for the first folks that call up and do that, I'm going to give them the option if they'd like to be on my private email list. And I've talked about that many, many times on my show and on your show. And I send a lot of stuff out that's really controversial. And sometimes I'll even say, I haven't read this, I don't know if I agree with this, or I will say this information is not vetted. But it gives you an idea of how we process the information that we talk about on the shows and all of the information that's out there that we have sent from various sources, including some of my confidential sources, that we basically, you know, send back out to these lists. So if you order $500 worth of product from healthmasters.com, including the magnesium protocol, the whole kit, we'll basically give you a chance to ask me any questions. And you may want to talk to me about Nephilim or Genesis chapter 6 or anything. I don't care. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. It's going to be your 15 minutes, and I'll call you, and we'll talk to you guys about it. But it's at healthmasters.com. So let me, that's enough of that now. Let's keep going with this because I've got so much stuff to cover with you guys. So I don't know, Joe. So the problem is that this amount of opioids that are being prescribed in the United States, it's basically on purpose. And I personally believe it's to basically further the heroin market in the United States. Because quite frankly, these are incredibly addictive compounds. I remember when I had to take that was called Dilaudin a few years ago, and I basically had taken it for a couple of days. The next day, my back really wasn't hurting, but I was wanting another Dilaudin. This is a super, super mild form of morphine. And I thought, whoa, I said, this is nuts. So I took that stuff and I put it in the freezer, and I told Sharon, I said, I'm done with this stuff. Because quite frankly, you start losing the effectiveness very, very quickly with pain relief. It takes more and more and more almost immediately with opium and with morphine and with these opioids. So that's why people continually take higher and higher amounts. And then sometimes if they get too much after their body simply can't deal with it, they overdose. That's why we've had such a huge problem with heroin overdose. Remember, my wife's half brother from a second marriage of her dad, who was like 37 years old, died of a heroin overdose 2 years ago. Joe, I reported that on your show.
Yeah, I have a friend whose stepfather just died this last week from a heroin overdose.
No, this is everywhere. I can pretty much tell you that every single person listening to this show tonight, with maybe a few exceptions, they've got a family member or someone they know or a friend of a friend's who has died, and they know about it, from heroin. Now, this heroin's coming out of Afghanistan, but remember, a lot of heroin is now also coming out of North Korea. So not only do they want to put a central bank in North Korea, they don't want North Korea competing against the Afghan heroin and basically taking money away from the black ops of the CIA. This is one incredibly, incredibly corrupt system that we're all living in because of the drugs. Now remember, the Bible says in the book of Revelation that in these latter days that these guys are going to practice pharmakia. It's one of the things that says it's going to put them in hell. And that's what these guys do a lot of. They want to addict you to drugs, because when they can addict you to drugs, whether it's a pharmaceutical drug or an illegal drug, it helps to fund the petrochemical drug industry and the CIA drug complex. I know these are some weird terms that I'm using, but that's what it is. When you've got heroin as the third largest commodity in the world, I mean, oil's number one, natural gas is number two, heroin's number three, with some upwards of $1 trillion worth of opium being brought into the United States and distributed to this organized crime syndicate that we have in the United States, which is also being controlled by the Federal Reserve System, Sabotin Cabalas Group. I mean, all of this stuff ties together. It ties together with these wizards and warlocks who sacrifice these children to try to maintain the energy field around the planet. We talked about that with you guys 3 weeks ago. It also ties together with all of the drugs that are being promoted and all of this crazy stuff, because the Bible says in the latter days, what is good will be considered evil and what will be evil will be considered good, because everything they do has a dedicated purpose of resurrecting their serpent god from the pit. Always remember that. These guys are a bunch of sicko perverts, and that's why we can't give them the time of day. And it is like this, Joe. If someone comes up to me at my front door, and we have these big, stupid water moccasins down here. Gosh, I've shot so many of them. And they're big animals. They're big snakes. And what I always do is whenever I see one, I shoot it. And if somebody brought me a box of these pit vipers to my front door and said, here, sign for these water moccasins, I'm going to say, I'm not signing for this. I'm not going to be involved in this. Take these stupid snakes somewhere else. That's what we have to do with these guys. They try to put these drugs to us, this pedophile stuff to us, and try to make us believe all of these lies. Tell them to take their lives somewhere else that you're not signing for. Because remember, guys, ask yourself a question. Whose report are you going to believe? As for me and my house, we're going to believe the report of the Lord. That's how we look at things at our house. Now, next thing. Of course, this is going to blow your mind. I did some research on this because I didn't think it was real, but it's real. A course entitled Fat Studies at the Oregon State University argues that weightism is a civil rights issue, making it harder for overweight America to get ahead. The course, which will be offered in the spring, will examine body weight, shape, and size as an area of human difference subject to privilege and discrimination that intersects with other systems of oppression based on gender, race, class, age, sexual orientation, and liability. You would think that colleges would have something better to teach than this. The course will be taught by instructor Patty Watkins, who penned an article in European Health Psychologist, which argued that humans can be healthy at any body weight, which is not true, an endorsement of the widely panned health at any size movement, which is not true. She goes, body size isn't a good indicator of health, which is not true. And then she argues to Watkins, even individuals who are morbidly obese can be considered healthy. Now, I looked a little bit more into this, and she goes on to say, I grew to embrace feminist pedagogy in terms of course content as well as classroom practices. My course now frames body image disturbances more as a function of oppressive societal structures than of individual pathology. This is what she's saying, that societal oppression is towards females because they're females and because they're overweight and they're being oppressed. The original research and stuff that was written on this silly topic was Paulo Freire, F-R-E-I-R-E. He was an educator, but he was also a Marxist, by the way. And he worked with and knew and worked together with Saul Alinsky. Here we go again, who was basically the community organizer. And all of this is basically trying to make people feel guilty because they're overweight, because they're being discriminated against. Let me give you a newsflash. And this is something that's important, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. This is just really, really important. You listen to me for a second. I've had a lot of people apply for physical labor jobs with me over the years, either as yard workers, people are going to cut hedges or digging ditches or whatever. And I've learned here in Florida, if you weigh 400 pounds or 500 pounds and you're trying to dig in the middle of August a ditch when it's 95 degrees at 89-90% humidity, you're not going to last very long in the heat. It's not because I don't think that you're a good person. It's not because I don't think you'd be a good office worker. I just don't think at that point in time you're going to be good from a physical standpoint to go out and work in the heat. This pedagogy they're talking about basically says that you're oppressing them because of your beliefs, because they're overweight. And that is simply not true. It's a physical impossibility for someone who weighs 400 or 500 pounds to climb a 10-foot ladder and cut a set of hedges. It just doesn't work. They may get up at one time, but they're probably going to have a heart attack or fall. So we have to realize, Joe, that they're trying to turn every single thing into a disability in the United States, because that way they can ensure that person gets victim status, like John Rappaport says. And if they have a victim status, that means they'll never turn around and try to accomplish anything in their life, because they'll say, well, don't you know I'm a victim? This is the problem that I have. I'm a victim. What do you think about that, Joe?
Well, you know, they've been on the other side of this. I've seen, I think it was in London and in New York City, where they had these posters where it had a woman in a, I believe it was a yellow bathing suit, and it said, is your body ready for summer? Something along the lines of, you know, asking people if there was a lot of stuff read into it, to the point where they called it fat shaming. And with this victim mentality that you just referenced, it is giving people, you know, when you have somebody who has, say they had a stroke and they're, you know, paralyzed in their leg, that's a disability. Versus somebody who, what do they call it? Transabled, who gets their leg amputated when there's nothing wrong with it, just to be disabled. People are looking for reasons, to have that victim mentality. Now, there are a lot of different reasons that people are overweight, and, you know, to try to gain, but it's one area where people can do something about it. At least try, whether it's changing their lifestyle, changing their exercise or eating habits, or, you know, a number of things can be done to try to fix it. You know, I don't agree that what you said at the very beginning, that people can, no matter what their body size is, they can be healthy. We know medically and scientifically that's just not accurate. People who are overweight have higher, blood pressure, more likely to be diabetic. And folks, if you can see, I'm speaking for myself too here. And it's just, you know, it's scientifically inaccurate to say that. And as far as the victim mentality, that's attached to it, we've seen that, unfortunately, in every area of society, where people don't seem to fit the, what do we call it? The societal, what the magazines and, you know, Hollywood has done to try to make everybody think that not only is there, you have to be this height and this weight and look this way, but you know, it spans to materialism and a whole bunch of other things. They're trying to engineer society into what they wish people were, rather than accepting them as they are. And that plays a big role into it too. People worry too much about what other people think. But as far as health goes, you know, everybody can be happy until their health goes bad. Then, you know, that's a terrible thing, and you're pretty much suffering if you're living in an unhealthy way, in one way or the other.
Well, so, number one, we know that morbid obesity massively increases the risk of joint problems. It massively increases the risk of arthritic conditions. We know that massively increases the risks of type 2 diabetes, and it massively increases the risks of heart disease. So, and stroke. I mean, we know all of these things are statistically linked to being massively overweight. So to say that a morbidly obese person can be healthy who's 400 pounds overweight is nonsense. But see, this is where we've gone down to. This is like, you know, Planned Parenthood is now telling parents to tell their children that there's no such thing as a boy or girl, and that a girl can have a penis and a boy can have a vagina, because it doesn't mean what their sex organs say they are. I mean, this is some sick crap that they're doing to us, Joe. And the problem with it is that they're really making people want to believe this stuff. Like, you can be 600 pounds and it's okay. It may take a crane to get you out of your house, but you're okay. You're healthy. I mean, what kind of nonsense is this? See, this is the problem that people have in the United States right now, when they buy into the lies of the deep state and these politically correct misfits who want everybody to believe that no matter what you are or who you are, if somebody says that you shouldn't really be that way or shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that, that they're wrong, that you can be anything you want to be. You can be a girl today, you can be a boy tomorrow, you can be a trans the next day. It doesn't make a difference. It's complete nonsense. Again, it's what these Sabbatean Kabbalists have done, exactly what the Bible says, that in latter days, what'll be good will be considered bad. What'll be considered bad, will be good. And they're trying to turn everything upside down. And if you get this and understand that these are the guys that are running the planet through their Babylonian fiat money system, then everything makes sense. And if you go back to Genesis chapter 6, that's how it all makes sense, is it goes back to Druidic worship. These guys, through the ages, of what they do to control the energy field or the veil that's been placed over the mind of the unbeliever. That's what happened last year with Hillary. When they knew that this thing with Podesta and the soul cooking parties was coming out, Joe, they had to make sure it got stopped. That's why when Steve Pachinik came out on Wednesday, the week before the election, and said, you know, the deep state or the CIA, the FBI has decided that Hillary Clinton is not going to hack this election. She is not going to win this election. Why? It had nothing to do with Hillary. It had to do with the fact that they didn't want who they were and what they were coming out in a public display. Now, real quick, I gotta cover this thing. How the obesity epidemic got started. I'm gonna talk about this in detail right now and why so many people are fighting their weight. Now,
we got a minute and a half till break, Ted, just as an FYI.
Well, okay, well, we'll talk about some other stuff there, because this is gonna be, I'm gonna give you the top 5-6 ways to melt and burn body fat. I'm gonna tell you how you can make your cellulite go away and all the other things. And we're gonna cover all of that when we come back from the break. One more thing I wanted to share with you before the break, and this is an interesting article that I looked up because I want to make sure it was accurate, by Ian Greenbaugh, and he says that Israel harvested 18,000 organs from dead Syrians during the war with Syria. And I thought, gosh almighty, are you kidding me? And then he quotes one thing in here that basically blew my mind, that I thought, that can't possibly be right, about something that happened in 2009. So I looked it up, and sure enough, it says Israeli citizen who made millions of black market organ trade and proclaimed himself to be the Robin Hood of kidneys is released from a U.S. prison. And it's Levi Rosenbaum, who ran a black market kidney business, paid Israeli donors $10,000 each for kidneys that he sold to Americans for $120,000, has been released from prison. So apparently, Israel not only is involved with this stuff, they're involved in organ trafficking and the other nonsense.
And we got to talk about this on the other side, Ted, because I have read some things I can't confirm. I guess it'd be speculation at best right now. But this was during, 2015, 2016, about Israeli soldiers, special forces, in the middle of the night, carrying wounded ISIS fighters off of Syrian battlefields. And there was a few people that were debating as to why. But what you just laid out could be the real reason, if that story is true, those reports are true, as to why that has been ongoing. And this is an area I want to talk about, Ted, on the other side when we come back. Folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Today is Friday. Our guest is Dr. Ted Brewer, healthmasters.com. The coupon code is DUG5, and we will be right back with Dr. Ted after this network break. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmannReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove, in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.